Joining me now in the studio is Johan Verbeke, Belgium ambassador to the United States. Belgium's a founding member of the European Union, and with the U.S., it's a founding member of NATO. We've been allies since 1832, and a number of U.S. firms have located their European headquarters in Belgium. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ambassador, welcome to Cincinnati.
Thank you.
The alliance between Belgium and the U.S., it goes back, if my math is right, 183 years. And not that there haven't been some disagreements occasionally, but for the most part, this has been a long-standing, harmonious relationship between our two countries. Why is that? How's that occurred?
Well, I think that indeed, as you say, we always have been strategic partners, be it in the political arena, the military arena, and the economic arena. And just to give you one example how tight that relationship is that U.S. is the first foreign direct investor in Belgium, which is perhaps rather obvious, but perhaps less obvious is that Belgium, which is a country of just 11 million people to be compared to the 310 million people you have, that still little Belgium occupies the ninth place in terms of foreign direct investment in this country. A $65 billion investment, which is good for 160 jobs.
That's amazing. Like you're saying, Belgium being the size country it is, that's the number nine investor in the United States. That is an amazing figure. Now, you have degrees in law and philosophy, and you've worked as a law professor, and you've worked for a law firm. What attracted you to go into foreign service?
Well, simply because I always had a keen interest for, you know, the world at large. As a young boy already, I visited a lot of countries, not just in Europe, but even including in Latin America. So I was a globetrotter at that time. And I said, like, at some stage, you have to become serious. And then I became a diplomat, and that's how I got here in the United States. And as you may have seen, as a matter of fact, it's the fourth time I come and live and work in the United States. Before that, I lived twice in separate periods in New York, and now this is my second turn in Washington.
What is all that traveling like?
We diplomats, we are nomads. We go from one place to another. We get adapted to it. We travel with wife and children who go from one school to another. We learn new languages, we meet new people, and that is exactly what makes it so attractive. And at the same time, of course, we are always promoting the interests of our country. We are one of the most open economies in the world. We are, in fact, the most open economy in the world, according to the latest Ernst & Young program. And that needs permanent monitoring.
Now, what have been some of the highlights of your diplomatic career?
Well, highlights, it depends from what perspective you are looking at it. If you look from a kind of personal, experiential point of view, then I would say that I loved to live in the Middle East, Lebanon particularly, and in South America, in Santiago de Chile. If you look at it from a somewhat more earnest standpoint, that is just the kind of quality of the job you're doing, then of course, being in New York as an ambassador to the United Nations and effectively being ambassador here in Washington, that's about the best thing you can get.
How long has your diplomatic career been going on?
That's 35 years now.
35 years.
Yeah.
How much in that 35-year period, what have been some of the more challenging things and issues that you've had to face?
Well, the more challenging things were first in Lebanon, where I lived with my family, two small children. One was born, as a matter of fact, in Beirut. That was the Lebanese experiment, because that was in the middle of the civil war in the early 80s, which were tough, tough years, including, as you may recall, the bombing of the American embassy in Beirut. So that was a deep, deep experience. A second experience, which was kind of, well, exceptional, if I may say so, was when I was posted in the center of Africa, in Bujumbura, which is the capital of a very tiny and very poor indeed country, Burundi. And there I lived through a coup d'etat, which is, again, a unique experience, perhaps for a diplomat, because that is exactly what we kind of like, if I may say so, between quotation marks. And then the third kind of deep experience was when I was living and working in Chile, because I happened to be there during the two last years of Mr. Pinochet. And I don't have to make a big statement on who Mr. Pinochet was. And then the transition towards democracy came in.
Now, one of the advantages that Belgium has is that Belgium is rather centrally located in Europe. I mean, you're close to all the major cities. That has to be a huge benefit to your country.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really the asset of Belgium, that is the central location in Europe. And that is important for different reasons. It's politically, it's important because it's also that central location that explains why we are headquartering the NATO, why we are headquartering the European Union, which, as you know, is an organization that counts 28 member states. And as you easily can imagine, once you are the headquarter of those very important political organizations, then that brings with it all the kind of foreign lobbyists, lawyers, law firms being set up in Brussels. You have the journalists, the diplomats. As a matter of fact, I can tell you that I was and I lived in Washington 20 years ago, and at that time, Washington was the capital number one in terms of the number of foreign journalists, foreign lobbyists, and diplomats. And today it's Brussels.
Now, this is your fourth time living in the United States. What are some of the interesting or surprising things that you found out about our country?
Well, the most surprising thing, I must say, is what I call your resilience, your dynamism, your sense for innovation, your sense of getting up every morning and starting with positive energy. And that, I think, really is a big asset that you Americans have today and, as far as I know, always have had. And that's so refreshing. And that is what I would say sometimes we in Europe need somewhat more. I think we are now on the way getting a little bit more of that mentality, but it's so refreshing to come and see how you approach those things.
Is there anything that you've seen in the U.S. that you wish that they had or did in Belgium?
Well, that kind of positive, I'm not saying that we are not positive, but the kind of resilience, the kind of willingness and voluntarism every day to succeed, that is really something that we can learn from you. And we are, as a matter of fact, learning from you a lot of those things through the many interchanges that currently exist between the United States and Europe generally, and Belgium in particular. For instance, I can tell you, I just was 2 weeks ago in San Francisco, visited the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, met with a lot of Belgians who are involved in the business of creating startups, very innovative small firms. And now we have in Belgium as well a kind of small Silicon Valley around the University of Leuven and Ghent, which are the most sophisticated, technological advanced universities. And we're also getting into that culture of doing business, entrepreneurship, not being risk averse and that kind of things.
I'm talking with Johan Verbeke, Belgium ambassador to the U.S., and you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email your questions or comments to talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ambassador, what are the ties culturally and from a cultural and from a trade standpoint between Ohio and Belgium?
Well, the ties are essentially business-related, I would say. The first thing I can say is that Ohio is a privileged trade partner of Belgium, just as a state within the United States. But even more so, I would like to point out that a lot of Ohio companies have major interests in Belgium through direct investments. And of course, Procter & Gamble is the prime example. But conversely, I can tell you that about 20 companies, Belgian companies, have interests here in Ohio. And one of them must be known to the people of Cincinnati, and that's the Koenig.
Okay. 513-419-7100. And let's talk with Jordan and Mason. Good afternoon, Jordan.
Good afternoon. Mr. Ambassador, I'd like for you to comment on two things that are of interest to me about your country. First off, I would like for you to comment on your unique beer culture and some of the sour beers and the monastic brewing traditions. And second, I would like for you to comment on the growth of the Euroskeptic movement and parties like Front National and Nigel Farage's party in Britain. And what does that mean, the sort of anti-European Union movement? What does the growth of that mean for Belgium over the long term?
All right. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you. Let's start with the beer question. I'm happy to answer that question. Well, basically, you made a statement. You know, apparently better than I do, that it is out of the monastic traditions in Belgium. That means in the medieval times, we are talking really about the 11th, 12th, and 13th century, that those brands, those fantastic beers and brews were started, and then they were spread all over the country. There was a kind of increase in production, a significant increase in production in the 20th century, and also diversification of beers. As you know, currently there are something like 450 different brands, and not just brands, different beers. I'm not just referring about how they look like and how they are labeled. I'm really speaking about different beers. And that now, we got in a kind of critical stage in terms of we overcome the world barriers for exporting our beers. At the time, it was a very local thing, a kind of local Belgian, local European thing. Now we are all over the place. As you know, we just mentioned that. I lived here in Washington 20 years ago as well. I didn't find any Belgian beer at the time. Today, you find them all over the place. And there are a lot of Belgian cafes in New York, in Cincinnati, in Washington, and so on. For your second question, you're quite right. There is, or perhaps I would say there has been, a rise of populism for the last, say, 5 to 10 years. Let me start by saying something specifically on Belgium. And we may be an exception in that, but we have not had at all any problems with populist parties. As a matter of fact, you may know that last year we had elections, parliamentary elections, which resulted in a new business-oriented government. We did not have any populist party standing up and let alone getting any significant votes. In other countries, you have populist parties, but I think that agenda is a short-lived agenda. They get it on the cheap. They want to score points by criticizing the incumbent governments without really having an alternative program. And whatever alternative program they have, it's definitely not to be implemented. It's simply not feasible or sustainable. As we already see in some countries, like look what happens in Greece, that shows that when you win elections on the basis of a populist program, the real challenge is how to get them implemented. For the Eurosceptic things, if I may say so, that's a slightly different thing. A populist party is, as I said, guys who want to have it on the cheap. The Eurosceptics is really a question of questioning some of the issues regarding Europe, and some of these issues are the right questions, and we will have to work with a new government now, well, the Cameroon government, who was re-elected now in the UK. We will have to work with them on a reasonable agenda, modernizing Europe, make it, you know, adapted to the current times.
Ambassador, have you probably seen all the stories about what's going on in Baltimore and then what happened in Ferguson, Missouri? Any thought on what people in Belgium think when they see stories like that coming out of the United States?
Well, yes. As you know, this is indeed world news. And I can tell you that we have a lot of sympathy for the problems that this country faces in terms of what happens in Baltimore and, as a matter of fact, in some other places as well, just for the last few months. We Belgians, we are particularly sensitive to these questions because we, as you know, have two distinct linguistic communities. In the north of our country, we speak Dutch. In the South, we speak French, and it's not just a question of speaking different languages. It's a question of having another approach, including a political culture. And what we have always been doing is making sure that there is an optimum integration of these two divergent but complementary and very respected and respectful positions. So we are sensitive for everything which is related to integration, to assimilation, to respect and tolerance of others. And that is the kind of message that I would share with the American friends in order to overcome whatever kind of tensions there may be in this country as well.
Now, you're going to be meeting with city and business leaders while you're here in Cincinnati. Do you know who you'll be talking to on this visit and who you'll be meeting with?
Well, tonight, as you said, there is that gala dinner of the Euro-American Chamber of Commerce. And there, of course, we'll have the opportunity to meet with a lot of the business people. And then later on, also we have a meeting that is scheduled for tomorrow. We have a meeting with some key players here on the local scene in terms of business, finance, and that kind of things.
Now, Belgium and the U.S., they've been standing together now for many, many generations, and it's been a very good relationship. But do you see any room or areas for improvement, and where would you like to see that relationship head in the years to come?
Well, there isn't really a lot of room for improvement because things are really going very well. I can just tell you that, for instance, the fact that your president, Mr. Obama, came twice last year to Brussels, not just for European meetings or NATO meetings, but bilateral meetings. Basically, the first time he met with our prime minister and visit the Flanders fields, which, as you know, are the fields where also American servicemen have been buried as a result of dying in the First World War. You remember that the Flanders fields were in fact the center battleground of that war. So Mr. Obama was coming for remembering the 100-year commemoration of that war. But then later on, 2 months later, he again came to Brussels and met with our king and our queen, just to show you that politically we have very smooth relations. We work a lot together, not just in the economic and business field. I already gave you the figures as far as trade and investment is concerned, but also on regulatory issues like TTIP, on political issues like our fight against ISIL with the whole foreign fighters question, on terrorism issues. The relationship is really a smooth and deep relationship.
What do you think about NATO? How important is NATO to the future of Belgium and the rest of Europe?
I would say that with the problems that we now get in Eastern, Northeastern Europe, particularly on the borders between Ukraine and Russia, that NATO's importance has increased again. NATO, I told you, is headquartered in Brussels. We are one of the most, committed members of NATO, because we are fully aware that the transatlantic relationship, that is the relationship binding together America with Europe, is one crucial for the long-term security of our continent.
Ambassador, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Johan Verbeke, Belgium Ambassador to the United States.